Welcome to Season 10, Episode 19 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we say a fond farewell to the circus. Again, welcome to Season 10, Episode 19 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me this episode is Paul and Chris. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
We did plan to actually have a couple more guest hosts that from previous shows come on, but like all things, fate was cruel to us, and they had work or other obligations that they could not change, even though they originally planned to come. And in both cases, it was pretty much last minute. Both Brian and George were going to try to come on, and they were both very upset that they could no longer attend. So, it's one of those things that happen.
Yep.
Wow, I don't know where to begin with this one. You know, it's kind of a tough thing.
Well, how about starting at the beginning? Tell us why you started the podcast.
Well, you know, I'm not sure if I ever really explained how the podcast came to be. I don't know how much of my own personal life I've ever shared with anybody on actually on the episodes themselves. I know I've talked to several of the co-hosts privately, but well, let's just put it this way. About 10 years ago, I was married. I am currently not married. And I was in a relationship that was, well, not great. The person that I was with had some emotional issues, and I needed something, in some ways, something of my own to give me some sort of solace. And I don't know. I don't want to say purpose. I think that's too strong of a word, if you know what I mean. But something I could do that, you know, I could take time out of my life, get out of what I was doing, you know, every once in a while. And I had already started blogging. I used to run a blog called The Bone Scroll. Either one of you guys ever hear of that one?
I've heard of it. I don't know that I ever read it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're not missing much, but I was doing that, and RPG bloggers was a thing back then. I don't know if any of you remember the RPG Bloggers Network.
Yep.
I think it still exists now, but I don't think... honestly, the state of blogs for RPG stuff has changed so much in the last 10 years, it's not even funny. I even say even podcasting for RPG-related stuff, it's kind of changed. It's not as simple as it was when I started, if that makes any sense.
No, that makes perfect sense.
So, you know, so I chose to, you know, hey, let's do something fun. I really was having, because of what was going on, I was having a hard time actually gaming at that time. So I decided, hey, you know, why don't I at least do a podcast where I have some sort of, where I'm talking about gaming, and at least I'm getting some sort of transcendental gaming through, or vicarious gaming through talking about gaming. Does that make any sense?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm glad that makes sense, because otherwise I don't know what else to tell people. So that's what I was doing. I decided, and I guess it was Mark. I got Mark from Dice Monkey. Somehow we got to exchanging emails, because that I don't remember exactly happened. And we were like, oh yeah, you know, let's go ahead and do this. You know, let's do a podcast. And somehow we got Zach from RPG Blog 2, which unfortunately I do not think exists anymore. It used to be on, you know, Google's blogger service. I know he stopped doing RPG Blog 2. And it's funny because RPG Blog 2 is called RPG Blog 2 because he had RPG Blog on, I don't know if it was like Ian World or something. There was something. I forget exactly why it was called Blog 2. But it was like kind of a weird second iteration of something that he had already been doing. Either one of you heard of RPG Blog 2?
No, again, I think I've heard of it, but I don't recall ever reading it.
Okay. Well, Zach's a great guy. He is. I miss him as a co-host because he was the encyclopedia. It's like, if you wanted to know someone in the industry who worked on what, he was your guy. And that was great in the podcasts, you know, because it's like, me, I know a few people here and there, but it's like, I don't know who the hell wrote certain books. I don't know who worked on certain books, you know, that didn't really get credit. You know, I don't know. I didn't know people who edited books. He did. He's like, oh, yeah, such and such did the editing on that one. And he did the editing on this one. And he was, you know, instrumental in working on this other product. And, of course, Zach was a very big riffs person, by the way. He, you know, he always told me everything's better with plasma.
Nice.
So, and I believe him. I believe that that's true. I think everything is better with plasma. Who doesn't
want
plasma?
It's not like we haven't had more than one recovering RISA dick around here.
Yeah, it's not even that.
You know? I'm not even recovering. I'm still collecting.
Nice.
So that's kind of how we got started. I mean, and then, of course, the name, I don't... We joked because we just were joking because we're trying to come up with a name. I think I, being my sort of my baby, I eventually came up with a name, but I always thought it was kind of a joke that, hey, you know, we got three people, we're kind of a three ring circus, and that's where the circus came from. I was like, oh, hey, let's call it RPG Circus. And if you ever go back through the archives and listen to like the first season's episodes, sometime during the first season we dropped it, I think. But in the first season, we were heavily trying to have that circus motif, and eventually I just dropped that because that was just getting annoying. And I think even some of our early listeners were like, yeah, I'm glad you dropped that. That stuff sucked.
Yeah, well, when you add your certain sound effects, sometimes it can be it kind of takes over the game if it's not modeled properly. And, what's the old saying goes, sometimes, you know, when you record something quite a few years ago and you go back to listen to it, you're not always happy with the results.
Yeah, that's true, and that's one of the big problems that we had with those early episodes. You know, I mean, I even look at equipment. I mean, I think I've done my mix minus setup that I use for podcasting pretty close from the beginning. I mean, I think even Skype was an early choice. I think we always used to use Skype. It wasn't until Skype really went downhill in like the last year that. I'm using Discord, and there's even issues for me recording the podcast with that, but that's neither here nor there at this point. But no, I mean, so, you know, I mean, that was a thing. It was, that's kind of how we started, you know. It was kind of, in my way, my mental therapy, if you will.
Yeah.
That's understandable.
And, you know, I mean, the reason that... you know, why do we record every 2 weeks? You know, it's one of those things where that was a decision that I made because it's like, well, I can justify sitting down and doing the podcast every 2 weeks. Trying to do that every week is impossible. You know, like some podcasts record every week. I'm sure most people are aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so, but then there's the issue of, for me, it's just that, hey, this podcast record, you know, trying to record every week just wasn't practical and still isn't practical. I mean, I'm even now it was like, hey, you know, I have things to do with my life. I love doing the podcast, but I can't commit to every week. And I mean, if you ever look, I mean, think about it. Even every 2 weeks, the maximum number of episodes you could do is 26. And there's many years where we only have 23 episodes. Because there are months that we just have one episode. You know, typically, especially like November, December, are like one episode each, usually.
Yeah, and there's been issues. Like, you've gone to Gen Con. We've had other family emergencies or equipment issues that come up. And just, you got to work with what you got.
Yeah, you know, and that's true. So, you know, people are probably wondering, well, you talk about how much you love doing this podcast. Why are you ending it? I know that's probably the question that everyone has on their mind. I'm sure I know I've told you guys, but... And the simple answer is it's not simple. it is a combination of things. One is time. two. And when I mean time, it's like people don't realize that, you know, as much as my workflow is low, the way I've decided to edit the podcast and do everything else, it still takes time, and that's time away. And thank God I do not record my podcast like some other people do. Like with the Mix Minus setup, I record in a live audio format. I know people that every single person that's on the podcast records their own audio, and then they send it to some guy, and that poor schmuck has to edit all the audio files together to make one audio file.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys have been on any podcasts that do that.
Yeah, I used to run one like that.
Yeah.
Did you edit it?
Did episodes of Appendix M back in a couple of years ago, and yeah, the poor guy basically had to do a lot of editing and tweaking and stuff to get rid of the ums and ahs and all that.
Yep. I did one, and we used Audacity to edit it, and it was just for like a 2-hour podcast, it was probably half day, maybe sometimes as much as 6 or 8 hours to edit a single podcast.
Yeah, see, that's no good. That doesn't work for me, ever. Mm-hmm. I think the most time I've spent on a podcast is about 3 hours, and that's when I had a major malfunction. I had to do some stitching 3 or 4 audio clips together, doing a bunch of other things, trying to fix some audio issues that, and in some cases, we've scrapped episodes. I know I have. I've actually scrapped episodes where the audio is just so horrible because of a variety of factors, either the connection from the host or whatever, that it's like, you know what? We can't use it. We're just going to have to. It's not, you know, there's no episode this week. I've actually done that. So, but that's the thing. So time to not only do the episode, get information, and that's a huge part of it. And then there's the fact of, well, what am I talking about this week? I mean, every time we have a podcast, I mean, you guys know, it's like, well, what topic do we want to cover? And we kind of try to brainstorm, and sometimes there's a list, and sometimes, like, I know I've stood around and go like, I don't know what I want to say this week. What do you want to say this week?
Yeah, there's a certain degree where it feels like you're just retreading old ground at a certain point.
Oh, but that's actually a very good point. I mean, I know for myself, I kind of feel like I've talked about everything I kind of want to talk about. And it's not like you can't revisit things, because, I mean, it's been 10 years. I mean, look at the news. Mm-hmm. I hate to say the news, but let's just say, you know, a show or like any episode of anything, there's always going to be, hell, you take any talk show. I mean, you almost have to make an equivalency of a talk show with a podcast at a certain level, whether you like to admit it or not. So there are going to be certain topics that come up again and again and again. It's not always going to be the same thing. I mean, especially, you know, or it's going to be, oh, you know, there's a new edition of D&D, and this is what we like and we don't like about that edition. I mean, there's always those kind of podcasts or talks that you can have where I like this about this edition, I don't like about this, that about this edition kind of thing. Or, you know, and in some ways, I kind of get bored of even that talk. I don't know if you guys ever get bored of talking about what I'm going to call kind of like edition-centric, or almost, I don't even want to use the word edition wars, because sometimes it's not really a war, but just kind of edition-related stuff.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of, I mean, everybody has their own opinions on it, and you're just covering a lot of the same ground that so many other people have done, and it is kind of pointless, because at the end of the day, you know, people are just going to have their favorites for no matter the reason.
Yeah, and that's the other weird thing. I used to do a lot more news, but at a certain point, the news became very, well, I'm not going to cover everything that gets released, because that just gets ridiculous, which is one of the reasons we switched to doing Kickstarters, because there was more. First off, the industry just went that way. I know that we all kind of feel that way.
Indeed. Like, you can really see a change in how stuff is presented. Like, you know, when you started, what were the prominent games? Like, you were just getting the tail end of the D20, weren't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, the prominent games, I think, were still D&D, Pathfinder, you know. I mean, I was definitely not playing Savage Worlds yet. That came later. But, I mean, I think Savage Worlds was out 10 years ago. It's so hard to know. Because Deadlands.
Yeah, and time becomes a little fuzzy once you get past like a year or so, at least for me. 10 years ago was some amount of time before now.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with you there. So you can definitely tell your change, you know, your what you like, what you prefer, things you would accept you probably wouldn't accept now, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and even still, I mean, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's interesting to look back in that regard, but then it's just like, well, you know what? It's kind of like, okay, I still have, you know, there's still a soft place in my heart for the old Rollmaster, but it's not something I'm going to play again. So this is kind of the way that is. So, you know, so when we get to this point of why am I ending the podcast, a lot of it's just time, you know, time and interest. And then I have a lot of other, you know, all the time that I spend on this takes away from other things that I'm interested in doing. I don't know about you guys, but I have more than one hobby.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's safe to assume that.
Yeah, and every hobby I have is expensive. I think that's the definition of a hobby. It's something that costs a lot of money.
Kind of. There are a few low-cost hobbies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what would be a low-cost hobby. Collecting rocks?
You still got to go places to get rocks. They're not going to drop out of the sky into your front yard. So
sure they are. You know.
Well, my front yard is all rocks, but that's an entirely different thing.
Could I recommend ducking?
Oh, train spotting.
Bird watching? I don't know.
Bird watching? Again, you still have to drive someplace. You still need equipment to see the birds.
Oh, no. Well, I actually meant physically ducking from the rocks.
Oh, well, yeah, that would probably be a good idea, too.
Okay, that's fair. But, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, it's just, I think, to this extent, we've talked about everything that I really feel, and I really feel like I'm rehashing. So I think that covers the most of it. And I wanted to kind of go out when I still loved it. You know, the problem is, and I think I had been doing this for every year. I always tell people towards the end of the year, I always evaluate whether or not I still enjoy doing the podcast. And the answer this year was I still enjoy I enjoy the podcast, but I'm starting to not enjoy doing it. At the level I enjoyed it, you know, 5 years ago, even. So
that's perfectly valid.
So it's like, hey, let's quit it. Let's not just like trudge through, because you know, even the listenership. I mean, I know people are going to be like, "What? Do you have listeners?" Yes, we have listeners, and part of it is that I know part of it's my fault, but. Our listenership, I don't think, has grown over the years. I think we hit a plateau, and it's kind of, I don't know. I just, I could talk hours about the economics of podcasting and how, at a certain level, it's definitely not easy to get as much exposure as it was early on. You know, you have to deal with the iTunes issues and iTunes changing their rules all the time and like, oh, well, your image size needs to be, I don't know what it is now. It's something ridiculous, like 14,000 by 14,000 pixels.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, when I started, it was 300 by 300 pixels was the image that you needed for your album covers for your podcast.
Hmm.
And I don't know if it's still 14 by 14 or even greater. But, of course, they're doing that because now, well, we have Apple TV and we can find your, you know, you can get your podcast. You know, it's like, it's one of those things where they're demanding higher and higher resolution images because, well, now people can listen to your podcast on devices that have screens that are really huge and they want you to have your album image on there. So I kind of get
that. I suppose so.
But it gets, again, that's a whole technical hurdle. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we haven't had a lot more. You know, I don't think the listenership, and again, this is just me because it's like, I think at a certain point, I hate dealing with the social media aspect of doing the podcast, if that makes any sense. I don't know what your guys' experience with that. I mean, I'm not a big social media person.
Well, I've done a few things, but honestly, sometimes it feels like you're just shouting into the wind.
Social media is, that's one of the kind of the conundrums of social media is that it is so much work. You are shouting into the wind frequently, but occasionally somebody will hear you. And so it's not enough to just put up a website nowadays. You have to do Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and all these other things. And you have to be on Google Plus and you have to be on Facebook. And by the time you're done working on all that stuff, you're like, oh my goodness, this is my second job.
Yeah, like I know at least a few podcast or YouTube representations that basically burnt themselves out, or, you know, if they're lucky, they just got a minor burnout and then they basically went to a regular job. But I've seen people who've had incredible viewerships destroy themselves just because they decided not to shut up on Twitter, for example.
There is that too.
You know, like a long time ago, I invented something that seems to work more often than not. It's called the 24-hour rule. If you feel really strong about something, give it a day. If you still feel that strong, start planning. You don't do this for your own... Basically, you do this so you don't do something really stupid in the heat of the moment. And it's almost the way you can't act like that on social media. Otherwise, you lose your crowd base. So you're basically hanging the tiger by the tail and you're hoping it doesn't bite you.
Yeah. Social media is such a... It's just tricky. I'm working with a local convention and it's tough. There's no doubt about it. It's probably one of the most difficult aspects of what I would say running a business, and running a podcast is running a business. You're looking for viewership. You may be looking for sponsorship, that kind of thing. It's tricky. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me within, you know, a couple of years, there'll be people coming in straight out of college whose job it is to manage social media. Not just as in a general sense, but in a very specific sense.
Well,
the new public relations experts.
Exactly. Like, how many podcasts have come and gone since you started this darn thing, Jeff?
You know, I don't keep the numbers, but there's a lot. I mean, there's still quite a few that are around that were around when I started. I think Fear the Boot's still around, right?
Yeah, they're definitely still around. Yeah. But honestly, they're the exception for the most part.
Well, and I think that's the thing. Most podcasts start up, and I think usually most of them last 3 to 5 years. That's just my rule, my skinny about it. Unless you have a bunch of people, and I think that's the other key. It's like for a long successful podcast, you have to have a lot of people with a lot of energy that can pass around the buck to do the work. When only one person's doing it, it's really, 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 really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you get to this certain point where, like you said, like, we've done a few, you know, we brought in other people to talk about their products over the last couple of years. Two varying results.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing that, you know, I love having guests on, but that was always a hard sell. It's like, who do you talk to? Who do you want to talk to? Who's willing to talk to you? And, I mean, when you talk about, you know, memories of doing the podcast, every time I sent an email out, you know, trying to find someone to, that might want a guest spot on, that was fear. That was pure fear. Just like, are they going to take me seriously or what?
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. We've had some amazing guests over the years. And, like, at least as far as I've been here, and I'm sure there's been ones before then. But that's... I find that even more intimidating than actually dealing with, hey, let's get a topic. Okay, let's write about a topic. Here's my notes. Let's do it. And then you basically feel like you're basically trying to do a bad imitation of Kenneth Haidt.
No, I mean, but that is, you know, having guests is difficult. And I mean, you know, because they want to talk. They've all, none of our guests have really been horrible and not wanting to talk about it, you know.
No.
But they've been very successful on whether or not it felt like a good episode or not sometimes. Yeah. But they really, they want to talk, but just trying to figure out who those guests are. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, why did I always have a standing invitation for people who wanted to come on and guest host? Because it was interesting to me. It was more interesting to do that than to try. I mean, this is going to sound weird. That was easier for someone to say, hey, on the podcast, I can say, hey, if you want to come on and talk, let me know, rather than the other way around, which is trying to find people. I mean, when I started this podcast, I actually tried to do sponsorship, to try to get somebody to sponsor me, which is ridiculous. And I went through a whole bunch of things. And the only thing I ever got out of that was basically, I think I got a couple of guests to come on and talk. And it's like, at a certain point, it's like, you know what? I'm not. And I think part of it was early on, I'm like, oh, well, maybe I can actually do this podcast. And I think when you initially start a podcast, sometimes you have like this dream that you might actually make this like a business of some sort, a real, mm-hmm. you know, a real business that makes money. And then you find, then you realize, well, the gaming market's really small.
Really, really small.
Mm-hmm.
So gaming podcasts, yeah, you know, if I was covering video games, different story. But I cover yep. pencil and paper RPGs. Yeah, yep. not going to happen.
Well, to be fair, it has grown over the years, but it's also only grown, I guess, linearly, as opposed to like exponential growing of, say, video games or something, you know? Like... And then on top of that, if you try to play a game that's not off the beaten path of Dungeons & Dragons, you often end up in a niche of a niche of a niche. And then you, there's a good chance there's only like, you know, there might be 30 people out there, but that's out of a course of millions.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I'm not saying that I couldn't have done a podcast that's just based on Savage World, but that'd be a whole different podcast.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and then, you know, finding a guest host would have been more difficult, and your, you know, your range of topics, even though you, you know, Savage Worlds is a wide open sandbox system, it's, you know, it's a generic system, you still run into the fact that, you know, there, at the end of the day, you're gonna like, okay, well, we've talked about every aspect of the actual core system, you know, how many genres do we want to touch on?
Exactly. So let's get into what are some of my favorite memories of doing the podcast. And oddly, some of my favorite memories of doing the podcast was getting convinced to go to Gen Con. And I don't, I think I went to Gen Con before I started the podcast, and maybe that's why. No, it couldn't be. Is that where I met Zach? Maybe that was it. Maybe that's where I met Zach. Because it's weird. No. I think we had already started the podcast, but I was still doing my blog, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
You know, getting rid of the blog, that was a time sink. You know, that's what people don't understand. It's like, yeah, doing blogging, you pretty much have to write every day. There's just no two ways about it. And
yeah.
I try to write 5 days a week, and then I went to a Monday, Wednesday, Friday scheme because it's like you go crazy. And after a while, you're just like, I don't want to do this anymore. It's too much work. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
It becomes work instead of fun.
Yeah, and as soon as it becomes work and you're not getting paid for it, what's the point?
Especially if you're not enjoying it.
Yeah, right. Like, that's the difference. If it's fun and, a project of pleasure.
Right.
Then you basically can create till the cows come home. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I've got an OCD on a couple of topics sometimes. And just, you get locked in because you're really enjoying it and you don't realize how long you've been working on something.
Yeah, and so
that's fun, as opposed to, hi, I'm really not enjoying this. Why am I doing it? I'm not getting paid. Bye.
Right. You know, and I mean, there's that thing. But, you know, my favorite memories are, you know, being able to meet up with all the people at Gen Con because of this mutual podcasting and blogging. And that's weird because that's not really the podcast episodes themselves, but that's like the additional stuff that happened behind the scenes. And that was really memorable to me, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah.
Well, dude, that's because you're going out and meeting people. You're exploring new horizons. Like, I mean, I presume that some of the earlier Gen Cons are one of the ones you had the most fun with, just based on past inferences. And that's when you got to meet new people, you got to game with new products, you got to wander around a relatively, you know, small convention in comparison to what it became. And that's fun because you're in a whole new situation that you're able to enjoy.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, that, and I think especially, I think the thing was the first Gen Con I went to, it was less about the actual game convention, believe it or not. It was a game convention, but almost all the bloggers were trying to just go to that Gen Con to do a meetup. if that sounds weird. It's like, we're going to meet up just because we're all going to be at Gen Con, was kind of the thing. And that's kind of how I ended up at my first Gen Con, was I almost didn't care about going to Gen Con. I was more interested in meeting other people that I had talked to or interacted with in person. And the second time I went, I stayed at Zach's house, and Michael Wolf, from Stargazer's World. Either guys familiar with that one?
No, I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh, Michael Wolff. Great German guy, by the way. Hello? Yeah. I'll answer that for you.
So, of course, it's the one day you don't do it.
Yeah, you know, that happens. You know, I love those calls. But no, I mean, Michael Wolff's a great guy, and he had just come up with Warrior, Rogue, and Mage. Is that right? Warrior, Rogue? I think that's right. I forget what the name of his game is that he came out with. And, you know, he came and went to Gen Con, and he was
I was just hoping to catch Laurel still up.
Sorry. Apparently the answer was Sheila. Oh, you got to love it. Okay, I'll shut her off.
Answering machine? Dude, this is the 21st century. What the hell are you doing with an answering machine?
Simple. I guess modern technology when it comes to it there.
Hey, you know what? I love, you know, answering machines are fun. It's kind of one of those funny things. I could go on about that. But so that was one of my favorite memories from that. And then I have to say, one of my other favorite memories, oddly, is sometimes just like we had gotten Zach S. You know who he is?
Again, I recognize the name, but I don't I'm not sure who he is.
Yeah, same, unfortunately.
Well, he's written quite a few things. I mean, I think he's more infamous I don't know if it's a podcast or I think it's a video podcast and video cast. D&D with porn stars.
Okay, again, heard of it, but I don't recall ever watching it, maybe.
Yeah, he was the game master for that. And so it's just kind of funny. He's kind of semi-infamous, but he was a great guy, and he was a great host. He was very gracious, you know. I mean, I'm a podcast of nothing compared to his viewership, but he was willing to come on the show, and I really always appreciated that. And then, of course, you know, James Radji. I mean, I know we've had him on the show, and he's a hoot. You know, one of my favorite memories of dealing with him was he sent me some stuff, you know, some stuff that, you know, I have one of the box sets for Lamentations of the Flame Princess, and I think he sent me something else. And as a return favor, you know, he lives in Finland. Mm-hmm. I don't know if either of you guys know that. And one of the things they don't have there is sugar cereals. It's considered unhealthy, so you cannot buy them in the stores in Finland. So I actually sent him sugar cereals in the postal service, and of course that was more expensive than the cereal themselves.
Oh yeah.
You know, but that was a good memory. The sticker, you know, I'm thinking, okay, well that's cheap. How expensive can it be? Expensive can it be to ship a box of cereal to Finland? My answer was, I think like $50 or $60.
Yeah, it's expensive.
Yeesh.
Overseas shipping is killer.
Well, again, I was thinking, hey, you know, that's not a big thing. Now, my other favorite memories really, really is when I used to mail out stickers. When people used to request stickers from me, I used to love that. And I kind of stopped doing that because, A, we changed the site design and people just weren't asking for them anymore. But I used to just, people used to request stickers and I used to just like, okay, throw three or four of them in an envelope, you know, and I didn't care, you know, postage in the U.S. is cheap. And even a letter postage overseas is like was $1.25 or $1.50 at the time. It wasn't that expensive. And so I would typically, I don't know if I would type a computer printout letter and sign it, or because I don't think I would do a handwritten letter, but I would do something, you know, write something very nice. Almost like, I know this sounds horrible, but it would be very, you know, kind of, you know, not knowing how to actually reply to this, it would be kind of, I think the format was like in business format, you know. Have you ever seen a business format letter? I know that sounds horrible, but I used to send them out that way. You know, it used to be very personable, you know, it used to be to that person. And, you know, and I used to love sending out. It's like, oh, here's three or four or five. The funny thing is I used to have more stickers than I did. But I think I gave Zach some, and I think I gave Mark some. And because I think we were going to give them out at Gen Con one year. And technically at Gen Con, you're not really supposed to do that. I don't know if you guys know that.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's because the convention hall feels like if you hand out stickers, people are going to take them and stick them everywhere around the convention hall. So I kind of got it. But it didn't, you know, I mean, I did leave some out, and some people did take them, but it's like, you don't really want to send, you know, you really couldn't, like, just hand them out, just stand at a corner and hand them out to people, because that'd be ridiculous.
No, that's completely defeating the point of having them in the first place. You want to make an emotional connection with those things.
Right. You know,
wasn't it for a while there that somebody posted them on some website that basically was for sales or deals? So you had people contacting you that really didn't even know your podcast?
Oh, that was my other favorite one. Yeah, that was great. I don't know what that was about. They were just going like, you know, because I think that's when I started asking the question. It's like, well, what, you know, if you want a sticker, tell me what game, what's your favorite role-playing game? You know, and so when I'd get requests for stickers, and I, because that's what it is, I started asking them. I was like, "How did you hear about the podcast?" They're like, "I just saw this thing, and I found out somebody had just randomly posted it somewhere." I'm like, "Okay, I don't know what you're going to do with my stickers." And then I was saying, "Like, well, what role playing games do you play?" And somebody started listening. So I'm like, "That's an MMO. That's not really my thing. I deal with pencil and paper. You know that, right?" They're like, "No." I was like, "Oh, if you want stickers, I'll send them to you. No problem. But I don't know what you're going to do with them."
Yeah. I know some people like collecting free stuff. It's as simple as that.
But that was a fun one. I also, you know, even today, I use the stickers to mark things that are mine. Like,
nice.
I'm serious. I'll put it like on my laptop, a removable hard drive. I'll stick a sticker still on, you know. And it was great, you know, because it's like, even still, it's like nobody else has those stickers. You can't tell me you got one of my stickers, because it's like, the chances are very slim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, you can't tell me, no, this is my laptop. You know, I've had, you know, I haven't lost equipment like that, but I've lost other things like that. And you're just like, dude, you're a douchebag. You know, that's not your property.
Yep.
So, but you're right. That's actually a good memory. I forgot about that, you know? So I don't know. That's the weird thing about even the podcast, even memories of the podcast. I think having the audio comments were always my other favorite thing. You know, listening to people, replying to them. I want to say we've gotten some guest hosts out of that, because someone talked on there and like, hey, if you want to come on, send me a message. We'll have you on. But I think in some ways, I kind of missed that portion, you know, of the podcast was, you know, we haven't had a lot of audio comments. And some of that, I attribute to the fact that, well, everyone's already asked all their questions, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, well, the trick is, you know, like, you can try to poke the bear, for lack of a better term. You can try to give a little controversial topic. But unless you do so, a lot of times it's going to be, that's nice. You know, when they ask for actual, you know, when you're actually trying to get some actual audio comments.
So I got some questions for you guys. What is your guys' favorite memory of the podcast? How about that?
I'll let Chris go first while I contemplate mine.
Okay, that's no problem here. Honestly, I'm one of Jeff's pickups where, hey, I just went out of the blue and basically went out here for a couple of years. I've enjoyed the many different people we've had on when I've been here, George, yourself-ish, and also some of the guests we've had here, like that one guy... that did the Kickstarter, that was probably one of the friendliest guys I think we've ever had on. Can't remember his name for the life of me.
What was the Kickstarter? Do you remember at least that? Because I don't.
I know he's from Texas. Or definitely from the south, you know, southern part of the United States. Friendliest guy we've ever had on. Here, let's find out. And I think one of the if I had to say the best episode we've had from this year, it's got to be the one where we got into a weird rant about does canon matter. Like, I think it was really cool just following the different nuances and ideas that we could do there.
Mm.
And the ideas that we came across, like, we start arguing, we start comparing notes, basically came up on a really weird headcanon. And it was fun arguing all about the different things as far as... Well, we didn't really argue, we actually just kind of more had fun with the topic, and I think that was a great experience. Plus, it's always fun talking about the random topics. Like, for the first year I was here, we kept doing weird theme days because I was trying to make it fit the thing. Like, I think we did pirates, I think we did ninjas, I think we did killer plants once near Arbor Day. if you did dinosaurs, and I don't know, it was kind of fun.
Yeah, you know, I think that's, but I mean, that's the fun thing about gaming. There's all those weird elements. I mean, I have not played the Mutant Crawl Classics. A buddy of mine swears by it. I mean, I'm an old Gamma World person.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, interestingly enough, hold on a sec. Gamma World.
Yeah.
I was just thinking.
Oh, go ahead.
Gamma World just reminded me of George. He said when he was talking, saying that he wasn't able to go, he actually said, "Let me just read this. You have to record with Jeff. You will have to record this without this host. My schedule just won't yield today. I'm sorry because I really like RPG Circus. I'm grateful for the opportunity I've had to record with you. If it is." If it matters, some of my favorite moments were when you talked about the Mara Project. I never played the game myself, but it reminded me of games of the past that I liked in the way I felt when I was 10, 11, or 12 playing games like Aftermath by Fantasy Games Unlimited. The sense of wondering to be able to do things that other activities just couldn't allow. So, I kind of like that, because, I mean, that Mara Project was kind of strangely a post-apocalyptic. There were kind of, do either one of you guys ever play Mara Project or hear about it?
I keep getting tempted by the PDFs on DriveThruRPG, but I've never sprung for them yet.
Yeah.
And I know there's a new version out too.
Right. There's a new version, which I do not have the PDF of. I have the old version, which is kind of funky because if you actually read the rule book, it doesn't quite make sense because there's actually two versions of the game in the rule book.
Nice.
There is the simple system, and then in the middle of the book, there's like this whole brand new advanced system. It's like the simple system, I think, uses, for lack of a better, I don't remember it too well. I have to actually pull it out. It's like the simple system uses like maybe a D20, but the advanced system uses like percentile. And it's like if you don't realize that there's two separate rules in the same system, you lose your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But the whole premise of the Mara Project is that this guy, the Maro, you know, for some reason, people thought he, you know, the way they describe it in the book, he either was able to time travel because he had some sort of, he was some sort of mental person that could travel in time, or he was some sort of mutant that gained the ability to travel through time. It was never quite clear, and that was kind of the whole point. And he had saw the future and the fact that, you know, there was going to be this apocalyptic event. And he wanted to prevent, you know, rebuild society after that happened. Because he knew that he couldn't stop the event, but he wanted to be able to rebuild society. So he started the Maro Foundation. And I guess from the future, he brought back, like, this microfusion tech. So all the vehicles were fusion-powered. You know, looks like a Jeep, but it's fusion-powered. And I think they did that in the game so that the players could have vehicles but not have to worry about running out of gasoline, unlike, you know, Twilight 2000. But yeah, all the players have, like, this pseudo-militaristic background. And so the players, so what happens is you have these Maro teams, and they're frozen. He also brought back, like, working cryogenics. And so the players are assumed to be stuck in these cryogenic, like, bases, you know, and they're placed all over the place so that, you know, the nuclear war won't take them all out, is the idea. Because even though he's been to the future, he doesn't know every place that's going to get hit by a nuclear blast kind of thing. And the book was really bizarre because there's actually hit locations in the U.S. It tells you, like, at this place, there's going to be this type of megaton device detonated at that location. And I know players are people who actually try to pinpoint all those locations. And sometimes you're like, what is this place? I have no idea where that place is in that. You know, you're looking on a map and you're like, I can't find that location. That makes no fucking sense. Where is that? You know, so you have no idea where the game master. I mean, obviously they had some sort of map that they were picking locations and that was the nearest location. It's just not, you don't have any idea where that map is. So that was, you know, eventually what happens is that the players get woken up. The problem is that the signal to wake them up is overdue by something ridiculous like 500 years or something like that, three or five. I forget what the, I'd have to actually pull out the rule book, which I'm not going to do, but it was overdue. And society sort of semi-rebuilt itself. And they never quite describe how that society is, but there are animals that have mutations. There's like these really large rats the size of vehicles that are roaming around.
And there's okay.
Actually, and on one of the modules, there's actually pictures of like what looks like an APC when there's a rat like attacking it or something like that.
Nice.
So, you know, nice. And they have the equipment that they have is all, you know, because of the era it was printed, is all circa like 1980 equipment. You know, you have M16s, but they're not like the modern M4s. They're like the old style Vietnam era M16s. And it's interesting because in the entry, it's like apparently he had started this before Vietnam. I mean, I think this goes back to like the 50s. And so it's like they described that certain personnel were actually put into cryostasis. They were not brought out. They were just given the equipment inside the base was replaced, and they just gave the people instructions to use them. And I always thought, wow, that would suck if you had been frozen during Korea and you get out and like, what the hell is this M16? You have instructions on how to use it, but that's about it. You're not really familiar with it.
Mm.
Say nothing of like morals and changes over time here. Like one of those old political cartoons that I always loved back in the day was Private Snafu that was done during World War II. Could you imagine showing that to somebody as kind of your opening film when you first come out, almost like Fallout? You know, this is how you use your gun.
Hmm.
Yeah, no. I mean, hell, I even think during Vietnam. I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with Vietnam and the problems they had with the M16 during Vietnam.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They actually had a comic book to explain how to clean your rifle.
Nice. That I did not know that.
Yes, and you can actually look online and you can find it. Now, I will point out to our listeners that if you look at it and read it, obviously these were guys, so the comic book has a very strange sexist slant to it. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying that, you know, it's like, it's kind of weird because obviously there's cartoon women a couple of them are scanty. I can never remember. It's been a while. But it's kind of weird. You're just like, huh. It's kind of a weird, it's an interesting introspective to that time period, if you know what I mean, in terms of, you yep. know, how things were explained, the people that were there, the target audience for that comic.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. And again, I don't know. I've been doing a lot of playing of Fallout lately, and it's kind of affecting my brain, just the whole idea that you're basically stuck out of time, and the Morrow Project almost personifies that.
Oh, it does. I definitely think the Morrow Project is one of those games that if I could play the Morrow Project, but I'd probably run it with Savage Worlds, because it would probably be a good fit.
I think it was Zach on Death and Taxes. I remember that one for quite a bit of fondness, the one I was thinking about earlier.
You know, I have that box set. I just haven't done anything with it ever. That was actually a very good fun time.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, I guess we can always go with this. Has the movie I'll throw this out for both of you guys. Favorite gameable movie, has it changed over the course of the podcast and you've been on it?
I'm trying to process the question.
Well, again, there's like, I think a long time ago, I think I said that there are certain three movies that are basically definitive geek movies, Armies of Darkness, Monty Python's Quest for the Holy Grail, MST3K, pretty much everything from there, Star Wars. There's certain movies that are basically just iconic for, yes, I want to crib that from, or I'm going to use cheesy comments here. And I guess what's your favorite movie that you think would be gameable? And then I guess for Jeff, like, you've been doing this for almost a decade, and has it changed?
I can easily answer the last part first, which is probably not as much as someone might think. And I think a lot of that just has to do with movies that I think were that you could crib from, you know, because a lot of them in my mind are older movies that I remember from my youth.
Yeah.
So even today, I'm still in that mode. I mean, let's face it, Jason and the Argonauts, classic movie. The Golden Voyage of Sinbad, another classic movie, you know, time movie. Both stop motion animation movies involved. I mean, if we're going to even talk about Harry, you might as well say also the original Clash of the Titans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. I guess I don't really tend to steal that much from movies. I'm probably more likely to steal from a television show, and, you know, things like Hercules and Xena. Mm-hmm. Or especially when designing episodic stuff, I will steal from a TV show like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I was recently playing Monster of the Week, and, you know, a lot of episodes of Buffy are literally the definition of Monster of the Week, and you just steal from that. So, and, you know, I don't know that that's changed that much. I've never really stolen a lot. I've never really taken much from movies in terms of gaming, just because it didn't really kind of strike me that way. I'm probably more likely to steal from TV shows. And when I did, it would probably be the ones that I, you know, just mentioned: Hercules, Xena, Buffy, Angel, even Red Dwarf. Would be the ones that I would probably most likely to steal from. And, you know, that hasn't really changed. You know, my tastes in gaming have changed, but I would still consider those some of the sources if I was going to use them.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with, I think when I was a younger kid, I did a lot of gaming where a lot of people would like, that they would steal too heavily. So I was always like, well, that's interesting. That might be an interesting inspiration. But that's about it. It may be a little inspiration from a movie, but to steal directly, no. I mean, instead, I can just say, hey, these are the movies that influence the way I see gaming and the type of adventures I like to do. I mean, you talk about, like, even trying to talk about, like, well, what's your favorite science fiction movies? And, you know, Star Wars is up there, but Star Wars is one of those things where it's like, yeah, that was a great movie, but there's so many other science fiction movies that, from a gaming perspective, influenced me more, that I really enjoyed. And some of it was just, I remember them really well in my youth, and even today I enjoy watching them. Like, I like watching Logan's Run. I don't know if you guys watched the old Logan's Run movie.
Movie or TV series?
Movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Movie's excellent.
Yeah.
TV series is actually quite good, too.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I haven't actually seen the TV series. I've heard of it, but I've never that actually is encouraging.
Yeah, I remember watching like an episode or two, I think, in my youth, because it only lasted like one season or part of a season.
Yeah, it's got the single most annoying opening ever. Pop on YouTube, watch it, and it's just, it drove me right up a wall. But I like the episodes, but the opening just, oh.
I'll tell you a TV series that I always like the original episode from an inspirational aspect, and some of the other episodes were interesting. I don't even think it lasted a season. The whole premise is that a family, for some reasons in Egypt or something like that, they get tricked into, you know, they pay some local guy to take them to show them something in some location. They get stuck in some pyramid or something like that, I think is what happens, you know, because he takes them there and he's like, you pay me more money to get you out, and there's an argument, but because of some sort of, you know, celestial alignment, they end up get transported to some other realm. And, you know, this was like an 80s TV show, and, you know, it was a science fiction element, and due to a variety of things, you know, they end up running afoul of the local legal system, if you will, because it's like they had like these different areas that were run, different zones or something like that. I forget, something like that. I can't
remember. Sounds vaguely Torg-esque.
Yeah. And well, so,
what was the name of the series though?
Otherworld? The Otherworld or something like that.
I might have to track that down. That sounds really fascinating.
It's not great. It's not a great show, but I always thought the first episode had promise because they go somewhere and it's like, hey, there's this society. And then, you know, they kind of, because of some stuff that they're doing, they kind of integrate into that society a little bit. And then you find out that, you know, they start getting a little sick. Come to find out, the whole society is actually robots. They're, all the people that look human aren't human. They're robots. And the reason, you know, for some reason, the robots were there to do mining. And somehow, over time, they evolved their own culture there. You know, no one goes there because they get radiation sickness because of the mine.
Oh, wow.
And eventually, you know, they leave. And the whole show is really like, almost like, you know, new location, you know, like you're on the run, kind of like, you know, how the Incredible Hulk, he was always in the TV series. He was always going from location to location to location. So new location every week. Strange stuff that happens, you know. Like in one episode, one of the kids is in high school and he's failing his grades because it's like, what? I'm not going to stay here long enough. Who cares? And because he fails so bad, he ends up getting drafted into the military, you know, kind of thing. Or, you know, some other episode where they're wandering about and they get, you know, they have some interactions with like some sort of like desert bike nomads, and they come to find out that other people from Earth have been there because one of the people in this nomadic motorcycle gang, you know, has like a dollar bill. And it's like, yeah, this was my father's, kind of thing. So other people, you know, they realized that other people had made it to that world. And it was kind of a kooky little show. It was ridiculous. But I always thought, you know, there's certain bits and pieces of that that were really really interesting ideas. And so, I don't know. Like I said, those are the things I remember.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty cool.
I think I'm making it sound cooler than it was.
I have my expectations set. I've got more than a fair number of 70s and 80s sci-fi TV shows in my collection. So I've seen, there's the Canadian one written by Harlan Ellison. I forget the name of it off the top of my head, where they're in a generational starship.
Oh, Star Lost.
Star Lost, yes. That's a tough watch. Yeah, you got to go in knowing that it's not going to be great. It's not bad, but it's not great either.
It's not one of those ones where the concept's better than the actual what you got. Like, in the last year, I've learned something that you might have seen as well. When you talk to somebody, they may tell a way cooler story than what it actually is.
Oh, yeah.
There are some shows that sound amazing as long as you never see them.
Mm-hmm.
Like
Star Lost.
Star Lost is an example. Like, Star Lost is one of the many reasons I ended up picking up the big-ass Metamorphosis Alpha book that Dungeon Crawl's Coffee came out of, where they basically did a generational strip, and it's probably bigger than a good chunk of planets. Mm-hmm. Like, they got this huge metropolis that all this crazy stuff's happening in. One of these days I'm going to run somebody through it just because I want to use it. And it's stuff like that that keeps you going.
Yep.
But yeah, like as far as TV shows are concerned, I still get a soft spot when it comes to the three attempts by Gene Roddenberry to make a post-apocalyptic show.
Oh, the various two stuff?
Yeah, I think one's called Genesis 2, one's called Brave New... Yeah, let's find out. I've
watched Genesis 2. It wasn't too bad. I mean, it was okay.
Right. Yeah. Alex Cord was the good guy, the guy that got frozen, kind of a Buck Rogers scenario.
Kind of fun that Lurch got some work, but that's
and
okay.
And then it's weird because the second one is actually kind of a remake. Same character, same basic setting. And then I think there was another TV movie. Yeah, it's kind of weird. I know exactly what you're talking about. I think I've only seen the first one, Genesis 2. I don't think I've seen the other two movies.
Okay, I would argue that Planet Earth is probably the best of the three. Strange New World has both the best idea and the most boring one. They do this one where basically they create this entire civilization that's based on the ranger manual for a proper zoology, and they're basically set up in a zoo. Sounds amazing, and then you try to watch it. And it put me to sleep, and I got a high tolerance when it comes to schlock.
I'm trying to think of which one. I didn't see Genesis 2. I saw... I can't remember which one. It might have been Planet Earth. I saw another one of the John Saxon ones. Yeah. It was post-apocalyptic.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, like, a lot of really cool ideas. And we seem to keep defaulting to the, I guess, media era of the 70s to the mid-80s. And that's because they came up with some truly, well, amazing ideas they were able to put down. And it's fun trying to see how some of these ideas would work nowadays and some wouldn't. Like, for example, one of the shows I was so incredibly impressed by in the last year or so has got to be Greatest American Hero. I had never seen it until about 6 months ago.
Oh, really?
Really?
And it
oh, my goodness.
My socks off because, you know the tune. That's one of the worst earworms of all time.
Right.
And but I never actually saw the show until... You know, I picked up the DVD, saw it with a couple of buddies, and saw the first three episodes, and it was like, wow.
Yeah, you know, the craziest thing is apparently at one point they were going to do a new version of that.
Yep, they were going to reboot it, yep.
Yeah, with a woman in the main role. And it was just like, okay, that's interesting. And I mean, it was actually, I think in the, I remember reading, like, if you get the box set for The Greatest American Hero, they actually have that pilot episode that was never shown.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Hmm.
We have just the, we have the kind of the shovelware DVD set that came out probably about 10 years ago or so. And you can get them for like $5 around the States. They're super cheap. So it didn't have that, but, yeah, that's a fun show. I remember when that was originally on and watched it. And of course, it was a superhero show, so you had to watch it. So,
yeah.
Did you watch that when it was first on, Jeff?
Parts of it. I think I was. You know, I think there was a lot of TV I wasn't allowed to watch. During that period of time, I think my stepfather was really big into. He liked Buck Rogers, so we watched the Buck Rogers the. You know,
that's a bizarre show.
Yeah,
that is a really, really strange show. The Great White Sausage.
The Great White Sausage. I don't think I've
ever that's what they called the lead actor because he could never fit into his outfit.
Oh,
he was always just getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Gil Gerard or whatever the hell his name is.
Yeah, Gil Gerard. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, that's a. It definitely was a very strange TV show because it's Buck Rogers, sort of, but not really. And then
not really. And then I mean, if you're going back to the original comics from the 40s and 50s, yeah, it's not really like that at all. It's kind of like the 70s, like 70s disco mixed with the original comics.
And it was such a weird show because you had like known people on it, like Jamie Lee Curtis was in an episode and
Mel Blanc as the voice of
Twinkie or whatever.
Twiggy. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, Gary Coleman.
Gary Coleman is the president, I think he was.
Oh,
wasn't he?
He was a president of some planet somewhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And because Gary Coleman's character was also from the 20th century.
they had to figure out the Futurama trick of using heads for celebrities, but that's okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You know, every time I think of Gary Coleman, you know what I think of? Mm-hmm. The musical Avenue Q.
Oh, Avenue Q.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saw it in a theater about 2 years ago.
That's
one of my best experiences. The only one that comes close is the Book of Mormon.
They were both excellent. I've seen them both. They were fantastic.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, no, it's... Like, my personal favorite from the Buck Rogers series, besides the fact that we had a whole bunch of really interesting actors from that time, is they had Richard Mullen as a walk-on, as Mook number two, and let's just say some people are very distinctive in how they appear.
Well, you know, Richard Mall, the funny thing is that, you know the reason that he was bald on Night Court, don't you?
No, I did not.
Because he had just come off a movie where, I love this, what the fuck was that called? Oh, shit. I'm going to actually have to look that up now because
it wasn't Stripes, was it?
No. Hold on 1 minute. It was a science fiction movie where he played like this mutant or something, and so they had shaved his head bald for that movie, and then he went and did the thing, and they were like, if he gave you this part, would you consider keeping your head bald? And he's like, I remember watching him in an interview, and he's like, well, yeah, it was money.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, dude, you go where the money is, and it's relatively minor. And again, I think it's hilarious how he basically played villains for most of his entire career, with the exception of Night Court. And he both loved it, and then near the final season, he absolutely hated that role. Because, you know, he basically became a joke. Despite being damn near 7 foot tall. But that's part of the fun.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to bring up another movie from that era, Planet of the Apes. Like, it blows my mind when I was watching the Planet of the Apes relatively recently how Dr. Cornelius has better archaeological showing in that movie in a completely fictional environment than a good chunk of the Discovery Channel nowadays. Like, he actually digs up the proper placement, he's got a right digging, he's checking the artifacts, and you can see they're marked out for actual location. Yes, Planet of the Apes has really good archaeology in it. Something you notice when you actually do the field.
I found the movie, Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sen, which was a 3D movie, by the way.
Oh, I remember that movie. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Horrible movie, actually.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just terrible. I want to see it again, though.
Well, dude, you're allowed to see bad movies for entertainment value, and I don't even mean unironically. No, that's fun. Like, I'm going to be looking forward to in a couple of months when my Rift Tracks a Krull shows up. I'm going to watch that pretty hard.
Krull?
Because it's been a long time.
Oh, man.
Oh.
You said Krull, right?
But I guess we're kind of getting sidetracked as always here.
Well, so anything else you wanted to say about the podcast, Jeff, that you found significant over the years? Oh, I wonder if you went on mute.
I didn't go on mute. It's just kind of acting a little weird on me right now.
Yeah.
It happens. So, but Krull, you brought up Krull. That's funny. I remember watching that movie. That, I think, was influential to a lot of people because that was the first time that it was fantasy, but there was that weird science fiction element that I knew a lot of people were like, wow, I really like that. I needed to have that in my game.
True enough. And again, like, just about every other movie, the Cyclops shows up, he's a monster to fight, and throw there. No, he's an incredibly tragic figure who's actually a really powerful ally. You know, he knows when he's going to die.
Yeah, that was a little weird. I remember that. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And let's not forget the magician that wasn't a great magician.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly. Ay. And of course, the cool side of a lightsaber. But I don't know.
All right, well, I don't know. Do you guys have any final questions for me? I think is probably the question.
Do you think that doing this podcast kind of did you get what you wanted out of it? And two, do you feel like it really expanded your RPG horizons, or was it kind of the reverse where you've kind of channeled, you know, your RPG interest into the podcast?
I think it definitely served the initial purpose. It helped me keep my sanity at a time where I was losing my mind. So in that aspect, that was, it was very successful for that. And has it expanded my horizons? That's actually a hard thing to say. I would say somewhat. But also, I think I have channeled a lot of what I enjoy about RPGs into the podcast more than anything else. And in many ways, that's what's kept me sane. That's kept me, what's kept me interested sometimes in RPGs. So from that success, I think that was successful. Because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, as you guys have noticed, I talk about a lot about a lot of the games I used to play or still play. Because I sometimes I find that I think we I don't think that we can't mix things up and we can't have new things, but sometimes I think we get a little too crazy. Sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, I like ice cream. I like chocolate, I like vanilla. Sometimes I like something really, really complicated, but sometimes we forget that you can have just chocolate or vanilla ice cream. Does that make any sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. I mean, I was recently saw an article about your enjoyment of music and how it's very much anchored to a certain time in your life when you start listening to music. And I think that, you know, RPGs have that same thing. When you play a game of Savage Worlds nowadays, it's not, it does not feel the same as when you played D&D when you were 8 or 10 or 12.
Oh, and absolutely not.
And those things aren't, it's not, those aren't just nostalgia, but they are very deep seated memories that, that have affected your life going forward.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's why, like, for example, you know, I'll always have a love of Champions. I'll always have a love of AD&D First Edition. Even though those aren't games that I'll play, I have a lot of fond memories of them. I mean, even Gamma World, I mean. And, I mean, the only game probably from my youth that I still play today, and I have to say I probably don't even play that at a certain level, it's probably like Traveler, the original Little Black Book edition of Traveler. I still have a very fond love of Traveler.
Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to think of, I don't think I had any other questions. So do you think you're going to do anything after this, or are you just going to let things lie and recover some time? Are you going to continue to listen to podcasts, or?
Well, you know, those are actually all very good questions. I definitely think at some point in the future, I may do something new, podcast or blog, more like, it depends, but I think it's going to be at least a year, maybe more, before I do anything like that. Most of this is going to be recovery and actually start just looking at other, you know, because a lot of it is I want to take time and start doing other things that I enjoy that, you know, focus, because it's like you can only focus on so many things, and you have to choose, well, which are more important for you to do. You know, it's kind of like the old saying, you know, it's like, you know, here's three items, pick two. You know, and if one of them has to go. And so it's like, hey, right now I'm a little more interested. For example, I want to do more amateur radio related stuff that I, you know, that hobby has kind of been shoved to the back end of life. So it's like, you know, it's time to break that out and start maybe doing some more stuff with that for a change. There's, you know, Barb, for example, wants me to learn a little, do a little better, you know, well, first off, I don't really swing dance, but she's been getting me to try to at least get some basic swing dance in for her, because she likes to swing dance. So there's obviously a little more focus on doing some of that.
And yep. Then,
you know, just some of the outdoor stuff I want to do. It's like, I want to go hiking. I want to do this. And it's like, I don't have time in my life to do the podcast and even, you know, even gaming to a certain level. I'm probably going to take a hiatus from gaming, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, will I do a new podcast a new blog? I think so. At some point, I mean, I have a few ideas. Like, eventually, I think I would love to do, you know, we've kind of touched on it a lot in the show, but I always think it'd be interesting to do a podcast or a blog where I pick a movie or a TV show from my, you know, from my youth or otherwise, and from that talk about what I would crib or could crib or what would influence me, or just generally talk about it and really as it relates to gaming for me.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I mean, there, we've already done that in a lot of episodes. Kind of, it's like, wow, that was, and I find that more. I found that fun. So maybe at some point I want to. I mean, even let's face it. Even this episode, what have we talked about? We have talked about, you know, several TV shows, several movies. Oh, by the way, there it does remind me. Probably one thing that definitely influenced me in my youth, and I want to say it definitely influenced my gaming because I think we wanted to, was definitely early anime. And when I say early anime, I mean probably my first real exposure to real anime, which was Robotech. Had a definite influence on me as a kid. I don't know if either one of you got to watch that as a kid, but that was like definitely, you know, full story arcs, being able to watch TV where it's like, wasn't like, oh, Planet of the Week. Kind of like, you know, I love watching Star Trek. Star Trek is still probably the original series that influenced my young adulthood heavily. But, you know, I mean, Robotech, even though it's not, it's based on obviously three different anime series, definitely had an impact on, you know, it was definitely in the right place at the right time. It was that transition, you know, where it's like, hey, you know, I enjoy watching things with a longer storyline.
It didn't play down to kids either.
No,
right.
It went full forward with the story, and you know, kids were perfectly able to follow it and enjoy it. For all of its ups and downs and human drama, and still, you know, it was a great story and a great show.
Yeah, I just wanted to slap Rick Hunter around and bitch slap Minmay. I just remember that.
Yeah. And again, I'm actually really impressed how much work they managed to retool the storytelling while still making it feel, you know, retooling three different animes and making them flow that well. Like, it really is a work of art, like the way they use the announcer, the way they recut things, the way they did things. And Macross really doesn't have a moral high ground, seeing as they've done Macross 7 as well, for saying you want to go back to the purists here. But you get to see three generations. Like, I really like the Shadow Chronicles. I just wish that they'd done more than one episode.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you this, though. Definitely that theme music that they did for the Robotech series. I always tell people, it's like, in a weird way, I start hearing that and my heart rate goes up. Is that weird?
Nice.
It's a good song. Understandable. Yeah. And again, the toys are amazing. Both Paul and myself have played plenty of books, so we've obviously played the original Robotech game at least to some degree.
Yeah, I personally think the Palladium system's a mess, but that's just me.
Oh, agreed. Well, agreed as far as, you know, for that engine's concerned. Like, yeah, the problem was there was, well, again, missiles. That's all I'm going to say on that one. Because missiles in TV shows, you're getting dodging hundreds of missiles, and in the Palladium system, you fire four and you're basically stuck. But I'm not going to go into that horse right now. That's not the topic.
So, well, I mean, yeah, I think it's, you know, it's interesting that you're going to, you know, you've already started thinking about doing other things. And I found myself to be the same way, where you know, you wrap up one creative project and you're like, I'd like to do another creative project. I'm going to take a little time off before I do it and then, you know, come back to it and see how I feel. And I think that we all kind of go in those cycles. Now, you've had, you know, the opportunity to have a 10-year cycle, which is, you know, that's exceptional, I think. Mm-hmm. Most people, you know, like you said, most podcasts run 3 to 5 years. My podcast ran like a year. Maybe a year and a half. And so here you've got one that ran, you know, 10 years, probably, I'm guessing, somewhere in 200-plus episodes.
You know, with the way, yes, definitely at least 200-plus episodes, because let's face it, if you look at least 23 episodes a year times 9.5, you know, that's easily 200 plus yep. episodes.
So that's quite impressive by anybody's reckoning. So, I mean, I think, you know, being the backbone of this podcast, you should be congratulated for, you know, keeping it running all these years. And there's, you know, 10 years, that's impressive for a TV show or a podcast or whatever.
And I should point out to all our listeners that if they ever want to listen to the old episodes, even when, because at some point the RPG Circus website will be gone. That's just not, you know.
Yeah.
You know, there's no sense in paying hosting for that. But the episodes are not lost to antiquity. Does anyone know why?
iTunes?
No. Archive.org.
Oh, right. Oh.
Let me actually tell a little story. The episodes were always originally I started hosting at archive.org from the beginning. I bet you people didn't know that. The only restriction is that it has to at least be either license free or Creative Commons, which is one of the reasons that we've always been at creativecommons.org, you know, licensee for the podcast. And so at a certain point, archive.org was having, there were some sort of issues with linking the episodes. And then I switched to Libsyn. And I ran on Libsyn for several years, but eventually I was just like, why am I paying this? And I actually went back, took all the episodes that I had on Libsyn, downloaded them, and then re-uploaded them to archive.org, relinked them in all the episodes on the website. And then all the latest episodes, and including this episode, is actually being hosted on archive.org. So, that said, you can actually search for RPG Circus on archive.org, and you will get all the episodes.
Nice.
Indeed.
And so unless archive.org implodes at some point, those episodes will theoretically be around for a long time.
That's a good way to safeguard your legacy, that's for sure. Well done.
Yeah, I actually thought about at one point, you know, maybe making the RPG Circus website static somehow, you know, like getting a static version of it for people. But I decided that was too much of a pain in the ass.
Yep. Actually, I'm kind of glad that you're making a capstone to this instead of just podfading. You know, nobody wants to see it end, but at the same time, you're ending it well. So well done to that.
Well, you know, I felt that the listeners out there, you guys, kind of deserved an explanation of why I'm quitting. And I like to think I gave an explanation.
I think you did, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was very interesting on, you know, when I announced it on Facebook, you know, at least three people were like, wow, I'm sorry to hear you go. One guy was even saying that RPG Circus and then one other podcast were the only two gaming podcasts he's listened to. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty fucking amazing to me. I actually didn't think I rated that well.
Well, you got fans, Jeff.
And, you know, but it's, again, podcasts are weird because I know that when you went and did RPG podcasts on iTunes, at one point we were listed as the second or third podcast always in the searches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's still true because I don't use iTunes. I think that's the major problem I have with iTunes is the way you submit podcasts and then, because you have to have an iTunes account to even do that. And it's like, well, I don't fucking remember that. I don't even remember what, you know, now, that's the thing. It's like, they don't give you a lot of control once you submit your podcast, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of weird that way. And you're just like, huh. I don't know what to tell them, but okay. I mean, eventually at some point they're going to like, oh, well the feed will die and it won't be accessible. And they'll be just like, okay, well, I guess that's done. People won't even be able to, that's the thing. At some point, you won't be able to find RPG Circus on iTunes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that's the other thing that's disgusting about podcasts in general, is it's very hard to get people to subscribe to a podcast, especially now. There used to be a lot of options for people. It's like, oh, well, iTunes is one, you know, this other option. I think Window, even though I don't think I ever got any subscribers from, but, you know, like the Zune had their own little service. And, you know, I know I experimented with lots of different things over the years. I even experimented at one point. I think I had I did a pay service where I had like a slot where you would just like point the, you know, you would, it would play audio. If that makes any sense, you know, it's like, it'd be like an audio hour.
Okay.
Where, you know, you could actually schedule. I would actually broadcast to that service live. So you could listen to that episode live while we were recording. And it's just like, well, yeah. Which was cool, except for the fact that I think we only had one or two people ever listen. So it's like, well, that's a waste.
Yeah. But hey, that's sounds, I don't know how else to say that one. Well, Jeff, I'm going to say it right here. It's been a pleasure, man.
Well, you know, it's...
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely been my pleasure to let people into, well, my brain, I guess, because that's the only way I can describe it, because I think I've always tried to tell people what I think, but I've always tried to be in respect for the fact that other people don't think like I do. And I think that's the thing that I really, I think gaming has really taught me, if you will, is that bit. And I think that's, I always tell people, it's like, I find some people in gaming don't understand that. It's like, they'll put down a system and I'm like, you know, it's like D&D 5th edition. It's not a bad game system. I just tell people, it's like, it's not a game, or I'll take 4th edition, because that's even, to me, that was definitely not a game system I wanted to play. And yeah. I said, you know, the worst thing I'll say about that system is it's just not my game. I'm not going to tell you that, oh, this mechanic really sucks, and, you know, because that's just not the way I am when I talk. It's like every person has to look at a game and decide if that game is for them. And I think that's a very important thing with gaming. It's like, I like Savage Worlds. I'll tell people, these are the things I like about Savage Worlds, but every person is going to have to decide for themselves whether the things I like about Savage Worlds are the things that they can enjoy about Savage Worlds.
Makes sense to me.
You know, that and being an old school gamer, it's your fucking game. Do what you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Dude, the gamer police aren't going to come into your house and say you're doing it wrong.
If there is anything that I have to say from my youth that disgusts me about the current gaming models, is I think at a certain level, when, you know, let's face it, when there were less games, D&D specifically, house rules were really common back then. I don't know if that makes any, I mean, you guys, I don't know how long you guys have been gaming specifically, but I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah, let's just say house ruling second, especially I've gotten pretty much at the cusp of first, second edition. So yeah, house ruling was pretty much required.
Well, but you know, the funny thing is that, you know, I always tell, you know, I always find people go like, you know, house ruling, you know, house rules, or even coming up with, you know, your own rules for dealing with things was really common back in the early gaming days. And sometimes I think we've lost a little bit of that in gaming, where people are like, well, I'll wait till specific rules come out. Really? Why don't you just use the rules that are there? And if you don't know, you know, it's like people are afraid sometimes. And I always tell people, it's like, sometimes I will just make a ruling. I don't care what the rule actually is in the rule book as a game master. I'll tell you what I think right now, because I don't want to look it up. We can argue about it later, if that makes any sense. And I think sometimes we forget that. We forget that it's just a game. The games are not perfect. And sometimes it's easier just to make a quick and dirty ruling, roll a die, even if it's just like, I'll give you a 50-50 chance of that being true. Roll a die, draw a card from a playing card deck, flip a coin, whatever works for you, and move on with your gaming session. Get on with your story. And then if someone in the game is really butthurt about your ruling, look up the rule later and say, okay, next time we'll do that.
Indeed.
And I guess that's going to be my piece of advice that I'd like to end the show with. You know?
That's good advice.
Yep. Do your thing. You know, keep your games going. Keep gaming. I mean, I'm going to keep gaming. I'm still going to be, I mean, I'm trying to do some stuff on Roll20, but, you know, but I'm going to keep gaming. It's just not going to be, you know, I'm definitely going to take a break here after a little bit. And, you know, don't be surprised if you hear from me in, well, 6 months to a year. I think it's going to be at least 6 months to a year before I do something else.
Nothing wrong with a nice little break.
Yep, you've earned it, man.
Yeah. You've been going for 10 years. You deserve a couple months off.
Yeah. What am I going to do? I think we're going to be his taskmasters here.
You're not going to be my taskmaster. So with that, I'm going to bid everyone adieu, and, well, everyone, good gaming.
Until later.
RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.